are live once again. It is the Field of 68 Best Bets Podcast and Best Bets live stream. My name is Rob Doster. The gentleman you see next to me with the Nike hat on is the one and only Jeffrey Goodman. Jeff, how you doing, sir? Nice and wide awake. Any heartburn from the PC8 last night at 2 a.m.? Nothing?
Yeah, the pizza wasn't a good idea. It's like 4 or 5 days old now. I got to go out and get some new pizza to have for late night. Like, not even eat it. And yes, I need to figure out a way to work the oven instead of throwing it in the microwave. It will taste better. I understand that. But, again, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, Rob, you know?
Oh, yeah. You got to do what you got to do sometimes to eat at 2 o'clock in the morning. I hear you, Jeffrey. All right, so we spent a pretty significant amount of time last night talking about some of the Sweet 16 stuff. But I just wanted to, now that you've woke up in the morning, is there anything – Any points that you really want to drive home? Any reactions that you don't think you got right last night? Anything else that you think we should discuss about the Sweet 16? It was after a pretty wild first weekend. Outside of the UCLA-Alabama game, it was a relatively kind of I don't want to say boring, but it was just a relatively tame round of 16.
Well, I mean, listen, UCLA-Alabama gave us the game we needed. Right. I mean, they gave us the buzzer beater, followed by the upset and just a lot of interesting calls in that game. I said before the game, I think the country needs Alabama, Michigan. Maybe they don't. I mean, again, maybe something crazy happens here and we eventually get to Gonzaga, Baylor. But on the way, we have these teams that you're just looking at, like how did they get there? Like UCLA, like USC to some extent. I mean, I know they got Mobley, but when you look at USC's roster, you don't think this team had any shot of making an Elite Eight or a Final Four. They've got three transfers, including, I think, two guys that did multiple transfers, right? Like
Taj Eady's been at three schools.
I think Isaiah White, has he been at three schools or two?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, but what I will say is this. I think Andy Enfield has found a way to make what USC is doing really, really smart and really, really intelligent in terms of the zone and just using his length all over the floor and allowing Evan Mobley to eat up all the space in the paint. Can I go on a rant real quick?
You can go on a rant. Go on your rant.
The officiating in the UCLA-Alabama game is precisely what drives me so crazy about college referees. And the reason is – so Herb Jones, the best player on Alabama, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, arguably the best player in the SEC this season, the guy that kind of makes everything tick for Alabama, picked up two fouls in the first 42 seconds of last night's game. Both of them were offensive fouls. One of them was one of those stupid ones where someone's guarding him in the post and he tries to back down and the dude guarding him just falls over and the referees immediately blow their whistle. As soon as the dude falls over, offensive foul. I fucking hate those. Yep. The other one, he was on a fast break. He's on the left side of the floor. He going to the on TV, going to your right, drives to his left, runs into Tiger Campbell. A charge is called, which was based on the rules, probably like a not the wrong call, right? It's a charge based off of the college rules. So that messes them up for the whole game. He's out for most of the first half. Alabama doesn't have their best defender on the floor most of the first half, doesn't have their best offensive initiator on the floor most of the first half. It's part of the reason they were down 40-29 at halftime. Final minute, 14 seconds left. Going to the right side on TV, going to the right, Tiger Campbell, the guy that drew the charge on Herb Jones, drives left. The exact same play. Nothing is different. Yeah. Herb Jones tries to take the charge, doesn't get it called. The pass goes to Cody Riley, and he lays it in. The reason the officials don't want to make the call there is because they don't want to be influencing the game with the calls that they make. They want to let
they call it differently. The last
problem is
they call it differently.
Yes, when you call it when you make that call 42 seconds in to give the best player on Alabama his second foul, and you don't make that call, the exact same play. I put the videos up on my Twitter feed. You can go see them. They are the exact same play. It's unbelievable how similar the two plays are, how close they look. When you don't give that call at the end of the game that you do give 42 seconds in to give Alabama's best player his second foul, that should not be acceptable. That right there is the problem with college officiating. We don't know what a charge is. It does not get called the same at the start of the game as it does at the end of the game. And it cannot, like, we can't have it be that way. So when you want to say you don't want to influence the game with the calls that you make, don't do what those refs did last night. That was horrible.
It was bad. It was bad. And the problem is, like, these refs are human. They're human, and they know at the end of the game they don't want to influence the game as much. So they're not going to call it exactly the same way. Ultimately, they're human. And maybe that's a good story to do, or maybe we bring somebody on here in the offseason. We'll do that. In the offseason, we'll definitely bring on – I don't know how often we'll do this. You and I haven't talked about how often we'll do this in the offseason. Certainly not every day. I can't see your mug every single day in the offseason.
Yeah. But, and real quick, I just want to respond to Andrew. Andrew, you're 100% right. If Alabama makes their free throws, then this is not a conversation. But the way that it played out, Alabama should have had the ball up by one with 14 seconds left instead of having the ball down by one with 14 seconds left. That's just the truth. And it impacted the way the game was played out. The referees impacted the way that game was played because they did not have consistent whistle. And like, I honestly don't care. I had no skin in the game, right? The bet that I had was on the under. And I think I had the under and I had Alabama -6.5. So it was like that call was not going to impact any, like, whether or not I want to bet.
Right. We weren't winning with Alabama at that point.
Yeah. I was not winning with Alabama anyway. Like, I'm not, there's nothing about me that's any way biased. Like, I'm not an Alabama fan. They were fun to watch.
They're a fun team this year.
Like, that's it. And UCLA's fun to watch too. Like, I want to see UCLA make a run. Like, they got some tough ass shot makers on that team.
Thanks, so, man.
And also, I want to can I go on another rant? Can you let me go on another
rant? Two rants?
I'm in a rant too? Mood. I'm in a rant.
I let you go on.
I'm a little bit frustrated by the love affair that Twitter has right now with Mick Cronin. Don't get me wrong. Like, instilling the culture of toughness and the culture of winning that he has at UCLA matters. But that win last night and their run through this tournament has been the result of guys like Johnny Juzang and Jaime Jaquez and Jules Bernard and the players on that roster having a ridiculous run of shot making, right? It's not like Mick Cronin is the genius for saying, okay, Jaime, this is the play we want to run. We want to isolate you. We want you to have someone stay in front of you, throw a pump fake, put up a contested three and bury it, even though it's a line drive. Like, that's not what Mick Cronin has done. Instilling a culture has been the difference maker for UCLA. Like, think about everything they've gone through this season without giving up. Right. Okay. They lost their best player before the season started. They got their ass whooped in the first game of the season by San Diego State. 8 games in, they lost Chris Smith to a torn ACL. 14 games in, they lost Jalen Smith for the rest of the season to, I don't even remember what it was. They lost their last 4 games of the regular season. They lost in the first round of the conference tournament. They were down by 11 at halftime against Michigan State. They were down by 5 with 1:29 left against Michigan State, and they're here. They blew an 11-point lead at the start of the second half against Alabama. They're still here. They give up a 3 to tie the game at the end of overtime, and they're still here. They're still in the Elite Eight. So that culture of toughness matters, but the reason they're winning these games is because they have dudes that are making dude plays. And I
don't think – somebody just tweeted, put in here, Cronin is still a mediocre coach. No, you can't call him a mediocre coach.
No, he's not. He's very good.
I get they didn't go to a Final Four or anything like that, but he's not a mediocre coach in college basketball right now. There's no way you can say that. He's done a hell of a job. I talked to his dad last night on the way out of the arena for a while, and I said, I'm like, what did you think? When he got the UCLA job, I said, I didn't like the fit at all. And he looked at me. He's like, yeah, I didn't really like it either. You know, I wasn't sure it was going to work because obviously Mick's been all about toughness. And what he said to me was he's had to adapt. Like he realized that he couldn't win games 58-56 anymore. So he had to adapt, and he's continuing to adapt. I thought it was really interesting. His dad's awesome. Hep Cronin is awesome. Like, we should get Hep Cronin on the show maybe. If they win,
if they make the Final Four, let's get him.
Yeah, we will.
But the idea that Mick Cronin is a bad coach, but he's not a brilliant X's and O's tactician, right? Like, he's not John Beilein. But like I said, UCLA had a culture of being soft, of not wanting to play defense, of having guys that were going to fold. And look at where they are now. They've lost their two best players. They lost their best center. Yeah. And they still have dudes that are just out there fighting with every reason to quit. Like the culture of it's not, and it's different than what he had at Cincinnati. Those Cincinnati teams, they were going to fight you. They were going to guard you. They were going to kick your ass on the glass. They were going to, they weren't going to let you score. You knew that you were leaving that game with a bloody lip and a dead leg and having to go through like an entire bottle of Tylenol on the bus ride home just because of how many bruises you have. That's what they were for toughness. This UCLA team, they're not great defensively, but goddamn, man, they are so mentally tough and mentally strong, and they're going to keep fighting and keep coming and keep trying to win. And
these people that are hammering him, do they realize he's got on the NCAA tournament? It looks like
10 straight times. He's gone to 10 straight NCAA tournaments.
10 straight NCAA tournaments. No, we're not saying he's K or something, but he also didn't have like incredible talent at Cincy throughout this run. Like he didn't have like all these big time dudes that are playing in the NBA right now. He's a good coach. Again, is he a top 10 coach? No, we're not saying that, but he's a very good basketball coach.
Yes, he is. All right. Let's move on. For the people asking about Michigan, we spent a lot of time talking about Michigan on last night's stream. Juwan Howard's game plan was awesome. We took the L on that one. That was very, very good for them. Let's break down tonight's games, and then we can get out of here. Keep it short and sweet.
No. Mike Woodson will be on the docket today. You're not letting me get away without
All right, let's talk about Oregon State, Houston, and Arkansas Baylor, and then I can let you go on your rant about Mike Woodson.
It's not you're right. I want to get your thoughts. I want to have a discussion on Mike Woodson. That's
okay. Let's do it. Let's do it right now. Let's do it right now.
Well, let's tell these Indiana fans that we're doing it because I want them to actually hear what my thoughts are on Mike Woodson. And I know they probably it doesn't matter. They've already got their thoughts on this thing. I'll let you start. I'll let you start with Mike Woodson and your thoughts on the hire.
I don't think it was the best hire that they could have made. I think that with some of the other options that had said no, I don't know where they could have gone that necessarily would have been better with someone that would have said yes. I understand their desire to try to keep it in the family. And I think that with the rebuilding job they have in front of them, I made this point before, that there is value in having someone that's already a part of the Indiana family where the fan base might be a little bit more willing to give them some time to develop it. I think that bringing in Thad Matta in theory is a very savvy move to try to help Mike Woodson readjust to being back in a college climate because he hasn't been there for however many years. It's like 40 years or whatever. And I think that it's going to come down to if he can hire a home run staff like Juwan Howard did, and he decides he wants to put in the work like Juwan Howard did, I think that there is a path to this succeeding. Now, I also think it's probably more likely that it doesn't work out based on the track record of all these former NBA coaches that don't necessarily understand the grind of recruiting, understand the fishbowl aspect of working at Indiana, that don't realize that so much of college coaching is about glad handing boosters and keeping money men happy and dealing with administrators and making sure your student athletes are getting to class and getting good grades and having to spend all night sitting there texting 17-year-olds trying to convince them to come play for your school. So I get it in theory, and I understand the path that Scott Dolson is trying to put in place for Mike Woodson to be able to succeed. But I think that the track record of that path has not necessarily been the most successful. So we'll see what ends up working out. If he can hire the right staff, get some guys that can get him players, make sure that he has someone on that staff that's not necessarily going to be a yes man, and make sure that he has people that can help him navigate the road of what it's going to take to be a college basketball coach, it can work out. I don't know if it's the most efficient way to try to rebuild the Indiana program, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as I wrote, I think a lot of it does depend on the staff. Bringing Thad on in kind of a consulting role, that's pretty much what he's going to be. He's an associate AD. He's not going to be in Bloomington every day. I think some fans have this misnomer that Thad Mata is going to be like Larry Shyatt was to Billy Donovan or Phil Martelli is to Juwan Howard. That is not going to be the case at all. He'll be a sounding board. He'll be around. Listen, very, very smart move. But again, who is Mike Woodson listening to now as he puts together his staff? That's going to be incredibly important. When Juwan Howard took over the job at Michigan, I do think Juwan Howard, his success has fueled some ADs being able to justify hiring, an NBA guy, an alum.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, it hasn't been overly successful. Clyde Drexler, it failed miserably. Chris Mullin, it failed miserably. Patrick Ewing, it failed until the Big East tournament. It really hadn't been going in the right direction. So I think, ultimately on this one, you're talking about a 63-year-old compared to Juwan Howard, who is in his mid-40s. You're talking about a guy who has no brand name in Mike Woodson compared to a guy in Juwan Howard who played for the Fab Five, played with LeBron James, was recently in the NBA, has a presence, has a name. Kids in the state of Indiana, honestly, 95-99% of them had no idea who Mike Woodson was until yesterday, or maybe until the interview process started a couple weeks ago and they started hearing Mike Woodson's name. I talked to a couple NBA people yesterday, and the breakdown of Mike Woodson is great guy. And I'm rooting for him. I want Indiana to be relevant. I'd love to be wrong in this case, like I was Juwan Howard. I have no problem saying I was wrong with Juwan Howard. I was wrong with Archie Miller, but I wasn't alone with Archie Miller. Trust me, everybody thought Archie Miller was going to be successful at Indiana. So to me, again, Mike Woodson, high character, low energy was a word I heard a lot, and a guy that was an average coach in the NBA. He did it with Atlanta for a few years. He had a good year with the Knicks. But ultimately, the people I talked to said, hey, if you put together the top 20 coaches in the NBA over the last decade, Mike Woodson's probably not going to be on this list. The thing with Indiana fans is obviously they want it to work. There's hope right now, whoever it is, right? Like whoever they hired, you stick by him if you're an Indiana fan and you're rooting like hell for him to succeed. But I think there's a vast majority of the fan base that is weary of this higher up.
Yeah. I think that, you're right. For most of the stuff, you're right. And it's going to come down to whether or not he hires the staff around him that can make it work. And it's going to come down to whether or not this is something where he's like, hey, it would be cool. I'm going to go coach my alma mater, as opposed to being like, I want to be a college basketball coach at the University of Indiana.
No, I think he actually, Rob, I had heard that his people poked around at other jobs in college, that this wasn't the only one, that he wanted to be a head coach. And again, when you're watching some of these other guys, Juwan Howard, you're saying to yourself, all right, if I can't be a head coach in the NBA, let me try this out in college. But they don't understand the work involved. Like you said, being on the phone all day, this Indiana program isn't up here right now. It's down here. In order to make it up, you've got to work harder than everybody else. And is Mike Woodson, is he locked into doing that and saying, I'm going to be on the phone all day, every day? Now, I don't know if Juwan Howard is on the phone all day, every day, but the advantage Juwan Howard had also was he had two kids playing AU basketball. He already knew the landscape. He had been in the gyms. And again, he took over a program that already had Xavier Simpson and John Teske, two seniors. He took over a program that had Isaiah Livers and Eli Brooks coming off the bench. They won early.
Franz Wagner. He didn't recruit right. Franz Wagner.
He recruited him. Absolutely. He got
Franz Wagner.
And he got lucky because you and I probably could have gotten him, right? Like it didn't matter who was coaching because his brother played for Beeline. That was a gift wrapped for him. So I think ultimately – once you start out, it's almost similar to the Nate Oates deal at Alabama, right? If he goes in there and fails miserably for 2 years, he's done. He's got no shot whatsoever. But he goes in there as a guy who doesn't know Alabama, and he inherits enough talent, and he wins. So people forget that he was an outsider, that he had no relationships, and his staff other than Petway as an assistant coach, had no connection to the area. You know, you got to win quickly. And if Mike Woodson doesn't, like Archie Miller didn't win quickly, he brought in a staff that wasn't good, to be honest. For the most part, that was Archie Miller's biggest downfall. I bet if you asked him right now, is his staff wasn't good enough recruiting-wise. Ed Schilling, he got rid of. Bruiser Flint didn't recruit. It was all on Tom Oster and Archie. And Archie Miller wasn't a feel-good type guy. Like, he's not a touchy-feely guy who's going to be able to connect with a ton of people. That just wasn't him. That's why he didn't fit Indiana. Mike Woodson's going to have that, right? He's going to have that to Bloomington. He's going to go out. He's going to shake hands. He's going to – maybe he'll speak at some of the functions that IU fans want to see Mike Woodson at. He's one of theirs. I get it. I hope it works. I think, again, everything I've heard is he's an awesome guy. I just have reservations because of they don't understand the grind that goes with going from the NBA to college basketball.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. But like you said, I do hope it works out for them because overall, college basketball is better when Indiana is relevant. So
yeah, Indiana, Georgetown, St. John's, all these jobs that hired alums. I don't know. I mean, again, listen. Now, I'll tell you this. Okay, I'll give you an example here. Arizona, where I went to school, might end up having a coaching change at some point here soon. It might be a week. It might be a month. It might be a year. I'm not one that says, like, you've got to hire somebody from the Lute Olson regime. No. Like, go out and get a dude. Get a guy who's already proven if you can. If you strike out, and I give Scott Dolson a ton of credit here. He did the right thing. He went after Brad Stevens. He looked at Chris Holtman. To me, he looked at other guys too. I'm sure he looked at other guys and reached out to their agents. And it came back to, okay, you know what? We're not going to get a dude. We're not going to get one of those top five guys. So you know what? Now we're talking about Porter Moser or Mike Woodson. We don't love Porter Moser or guys like that. So we're gonna go with one of our own. I'm fine with how Scott Dolson approached this thing. I just want to see who handpicks Mike Woodson's staff for him. If he's listening to the right people here, he's got a chance. Like Isaiah Thomas. All right,
so do this. If you're Mike Woodson just hired you as his advisor to put together a staff. Make the staff for him that you would hire.
I would hire one of Mike Lewis or Dane Fife. Probably not both, although they get along great. So if you hired them both, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. You could hire both those guys. And then instead of going with an NBA guy, I would probably hire – you have Thad. That helps. I still might hire a veteran former coach, a guy who's been – I mean, Dane, the good thing is Dane was a head coach, but it was many, many moons ago. I might hire a veteran head coach, maybe even a guy who's been a head coach like in the NBA. Man, I don't even know if you need it. I don't think you need it. Maybe an NBA developmental guy or just another recruiter.
That's what I was going to say is, is somebody that can relate to the players. Someone that is young, right. you need a black assistant on that staff too.
Like and you need someone Calvert that can, Cheney. Probably not yeah. Calvert Cheney.
But so, someone of that ilk where, that's going to have a little bit more cachet with the name cachet with the players that you're recruiting that can go into the living room of those families of the players that you're targeting. And that because, look, I don't think the X's and O's are going to be a problem for Mike Woodson. Like he got the Atlanta Hawks to the playoffs 3 years in a row.
Yeah,
he won 54 games with the New York Knicks. Like yes. put his ass in a Hall of Fame. Right. He won 54 games with the New York Knicks. But the issue is going to be all of the other stuff that goes along with coaching in college. I love the Dane Fife call. I love the Mike Lewis call. I don't know if you could hire them both. That does feel a little bit like overkill on the staff. Cause it's two repetitive. Of the same thing. Yeah. A little repetitive, but who knows? I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. And again, absolutely making sure you have another player development guy and someone else that can connect with those players. All right, let's talk about the games tonight. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
First game, Oregon State, Houston. Houston is laying 8. That total is 129. Yeah. It's actually come up. When I wrote my column last night for Bet Rivers, that line was 7.5. So in the last 6.5 hours, Jeff, That line has gone from 7.5 to 8. It opened at eight.
You put on the Houston Cougars. That's why you dropped like 50 grand, didn't you?
That's not, well, no, because that's not where I'm going to have my money invested in this game.
Wow, look at you. You're going to swing the line back with your 50 grand to 7.5. Yeah. That's what you're going to do. You're going with Tinkle. You're going with the Tinkles, the Fighting Wayne Tinkles, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And there's a couple reasons why. First and foremost, I think that Oregon State has proven over the course of the last month that, like, we need to stop doubting them and stop saying, oh, it's Oregon State, and recognize the fact that this team has now won, 8 straight games. They have covered in 12 of their last 13 and 16 of their last 19.
Wow.
They have an elite shot maker and creator in Ethan Thompson that can bail them out when things get bogged down. They have size inside. They have athletes that can get offensive rebounds. They got the kid, the Lucas kid. I can never remember his first name. That makes big shot after big shot after big shot. And most importantly, Jeff, here's the biggest thing.
What's the biggest thing?
Both of these teams play at a pace that ranks outside the top 300, right? Both of them, according to KenPom, are outside the top 300 in average offensive possession time. This is going to be a slower game. It's going to be a 65-possession game. I understand how good Houston is, and I actually think that they're probably better than a lot of people give them credit for. But giving me 8 points in a game that I expect will be in the high 50s or the low 60s is just too many points for a team that is playing with the confidence that Oregon State has, that has been able to switch up defenses as effectively as they have, and has a guy like Ethan Thompson who's playing out of his mind right now. So it's too many points. I think this is going to be another grinded out, ugly affair. So I'll take the 8 points in this spot.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I think it could be a very low scoring grinder. I just see that happening, right? I mean, Houston, they did make their share of shots last game through the zone, but I think honestly, they just, Kelvin's such a good coach, he figured it out, you know, and Sasser made some.
And you know what else it is? Against Syracuse, they scored 62 points. The problem was Syracuse did not have anybody that can go out and go get a bucket on their own. Buddy Boeheim, for as good he is not necessarily something. You're not giving him the ball on the wing and saying, go make something happen, buddy. You need someone to create for him and make a shot. Alan Griffin.
You know what he's Oregon State is big, strong. Like, I just felt like Dolaje and Buddy Boeheim were overmatched physically in that game. Oregon State, when you look at them, they're men. I mean, they are. They're men. Like, we don't know who half these dudes are, you know, going in, to be honest. Like, Ethan Thompson, we knew, you know, like, but we didn't know a lot of these dudes because in January, we thought Wayne Tinkle was probably on his way out. And now he's on his way to.
I'll be honest. I don't think I could have named two players on Oregon State.
I knew Alatiche from, I can't even remember where he transferred from now, but because I do so much with transfers. I remember when they got him, but
that's
I didn't.
That's a fun name to say. Like that's the best part about him is Alatiche. What a great name! It just rolls off the tongue. All right,
I'm kind of with you. Listen. They're making shots lately, and they're guarding, right? Like, and that combo. Now you've got, and they're playing so loose. What do they have to lose right now? Like, legitimately, they're playing as loose as any team playing for a Final Four could be. There's no pressure on them, and it's not like they're playing some juggernaut of a team. They're playing a really good team with a really good coach, but again, that rolled through what? I mean, what their road isn't exactly overwhelming to get here, number one, and their road in the AAC was completely underwhelming. I mean, bad AAC this year.
They really haven't played anybody since Texas Tech. It's pretty funny.
It's crazy.
Although I will say this. The Memphis team that they played twice late in the season for me was probably a top 25 team in the country. So,
but like you said, I mean, you look through it. It is crazy who they have played. They play Wichita State.
Played Texas Tech on November 25th. And then beyond that, they played Memphis twice and Wichita State once, and they lost to East Carolina. It's like, what the fuck? They haven't beaten anybody. Let's talk about Baylor, Arkansas. Baylor's laying 7.5. That total is 147. Jeff, please explain to me why I should be on anyone other than the Bears.
I mean, Woo Pig Suey. Like, that's why. Like Arkansas's got Eric Musselman. He's a hell of a basketball coach, if you haven't noticed.
Right? He is.
He's a really good coach. Now, they got lucky against Oral Roberts. Let's be honest here. Oral Roberts went cold at the right time in that game, right? They got some good looks at the end of that game, and they just flat out missed them. And if they make a couple of those, right now we're talking about the Scott Drew, Paul Mills coaching matchup and not the Scott Drew, Eric Musselman coaching matchup.
They did. I don't know if I would say they went cold at the right time, because I think that it was a lot more of Arkansas's game plan was, okay, look, if you want to have that dude that we don't know that no one's ever seen before, if you want to have him shoot the shots, go ahead, because we're going to make sure that Kevin O'Banner and Max Asmus don't beat us. I think it was a calculated risk by Musselman that paid off.
But still a risk, and if one of those dudes makes like one of those threes –
But it's when you have guys that are 25% three-point shooters shooting threes, like that's a situation where you say, okay, that's the shot we want. If we're going to get beat with that, we're going to get beat with that. So, like, I hear what you're saying, but I think that was what – that was, Arkansas's game plan was basically to allow that guy to shoot. Here's my issue, and I think – so I think I'm going to be on Baylor here. I think that this is a pretty easy cap for me, and the biggest reason why is this. Arkansas, when they're at their best, they're playing Justin Smith at the five. Like, that's the lineup that's worked for them better than anything else. I love what Jalen Williams has done. He's been able to impact games, but they are at their best when Justin Smith is at the five and they have four guards on the floor around him. You know what the problem with that is? That means matching up perfectly. It means Mark Vidal's at the five, and Baylor will be able to play their four guards, whether it's Matthew Meyer, Adam Flagler, Macy Oteague, Jared Butler, and Davion Mitchell. Four of those guys will be able to be on the floor with Mark Vidal, and you won't be able to take advantage of their size. And I don't think – it's the same thing as Gonzaga versus Creighton. I don't think that you want to try to beat Baylor at their game, and that's Baylor's game. The other problem is I don't know – so, like, what Mus is better at than – pretty much anybody in college basketball, and you can tell he's got his NBA roots here, is that he finds the matchup that works for him, and he just over and over and over again. Like, the reason why they came back against Oral Roberts is because he gave the ball to Jalen Tate, and he said, go dribble into a post-up. Max Asmus can't guard you. Go finish.
Good. Yep.
I don't know if that's going to work against Baylor. Now, can Jalen Tate post up Adam Flagler? Sure.
Yes.
Can Jalen Tate post up Jared Butler? Maybe. Can he post up Macy Oteague? I don't think so. Can he post up Davion Mitchell? Probably not. So I don't know.
You expose the Adam Flagler matchup on the defensive end. That's what you end up doing, or even Teague. For me, the key is going to be, I think it's Jared Butler. Like, to me, Slater did such a good job on him. Villanova had those big guards, and they put Slater on him, and honestly – Jared Butler didn't do much. He didn't do much until Slater got hurt. And then you saw him start to drive by. Like, I want to see Jared Butler be more aggressive, more assertive, going to the basket if that shot's not falling from the perimeter. If Jared Butler plays like an All-American, Baylor covers. If he doesn't, they may lose.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I do think that at the same time, you can say the same thing about Moses Moody for Arkansas. This is going to be a tough matchup
The difference is Baylor's defense. We haven't even talked about that yet. That's the difference. Is Baylor's defense can be high level. Like, Arkansas is going to have to outscore you to win. Baylor can win a 68-62 game. They could really make your life miserable if they're locked in. If you've got Vito playing at his highest level, you've got Davion Mitchell, who's always going to play at his highest level defensively. And then, like, listen, again, Jared Butler's a pretty good defender. He's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, not elite level like those two, but, man, most people, Jared Butler would be like their top defender, perimeter defender on their team, if not for a guy named Davion Mitchell.
I don't know. I think Jared Butler's defense has been a little bit overblown this season. I think it's a little bit of a product. He's fine. He's not bad, but like I think he's a product of the Baylor system as much as he is a great defender himself. Does that make sense?
He's also a product of like having a guy next to him that's so good. I think.
Yeah, and, here's the other thing about it, Jeff. He's never going to have to guard the opposing team's best player. Like Davion Mitchell can take away whoever you got to put him on. And then if you would just put Jared Butler on like Desi Sills, he can do a job on Desi Sills.
That's what I'm saying. He gets your second best perimeter.
It's because it's Desi Sills. Like, what do you? What are you worried
about? No disrespect to Desi.
Are you on? So who are you on there? Are you on Baylor or Arkansas?
I don't even know. We just talked about it for 3 minutes. I still don't know which way I'm going with this game. I want to be on Baylor. I do.
I'll tell you this much. The line is coming down. So it was at 8 last night when I wrote my thing, and now it's at 7.5. If it keeps coming down, I think, look, I think
it will come down. I think it might come down to 7. So I'm going to wait it out and see if it comes down to 7 and grab Baylor there. I think Baylor wins. I just don't know if they cover in this one. I think they will. I mean, again, nobody's been on the Baylor bandwagon longer than me. Nobody. A year ago, November, in Myrtle Beach, that's when I jumped on this bandwagon. I'm telling you, I think I was the first one on.
You love telling this Myrtle Beach story.
It's true. Well, I wish I was in Myrtle Beach right now. It's probably 80 degrees.
Between seeing Baylor and telling the story about the refs that you saw at Myrtle Beach, like you tell
me. No, that was Charleston.
Oh, that was Charleston. Okay.
Different.
So at least the stories you tell over and over again for two different events. But anyway, all right. So I'll be on Baylor minus 7.5. Arkansas, I'll be on Oregon State plus 8. Jeff will be on Oregon State. You gotta go to BetSports to find his Baylor picks, Baylor Arkansas picks. So, Jeff, we will see everybody again tonight. We're going to do a post game show again. I don't know if you're going to be able to show up, but if you do,
please. I'm just a little bit late. I'm a little bit tardy because I'm at the games, and we'll see if I got to write after the game. It'll depend how the late game goes.
All right, perfect. We'll see you guys tonight.